internal organization. When you move, now, just any which way, you have not the instinct for that internal organization. So I think that's what I was talking about in the speech class also. When internally you make a decision, you know, mm-hmm. to release and breath, then it always works for you. Mm-hmm. When you do it externally, you are obedient and hate the lesson. So it has, you know, we talk about the inside body and the outside body to free the one, and the other will respond. There's something about the inside brain and the outside brain. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's so I'm asking you now to move with the inside brain, to make that internal decision, to allow the thing to be somewhat different. Take that as a new idea for yourself, that somewhere along the line you threw away all organization. When you take on organization of the body, so up to now you've been taking on external organization, which makes it alien to you. Alright? See whether you can move into that part of yourself and desire it internally to have that integration. So really is I-N, integration, internal. Good. Get up again, and this time, let's take it step by tiny step. Take that, remember we went to the laser beam, the center. Yeah, don't fuss with the elbows. Right? Just see the laser beam. And then I want you to do this very slowly. As you move the right foot forward, let the left hand go out. So that you're teaching yourself what it is in your own terms. Of course you're moving too slowly.
Yeah. Taking an awful big step too.
See, let me say what it is you're doing right now mm-hmm. is following the exercise externally, mm-hmm. obediently. You're not moving it into your knowledge of what it means to teach yourself something. This is, you see how, Glear does that also. When you don't do it right, that's what you do. You move into that external.
It feels creepy.
Exactly. So what we're doing is both objective and subjective. Mm-hmm. Just as we said last night, every exercise has to be both objective and subjective. Every work of art has to be objective and subjective. So the subjective part, right? The subjective part is important. No, let me say it this way. The objective part is to listen to what I'm asking you to do. I'm saying, do it at your own pace, move one, the right foot out, the left hand, left foot right. That's objective, okay? The subjective is find what you already know about how you would practice that if you were alone. You see? And that will give you your internal acceptance of this thing that you want to learn. Alright? Good. So, whereas there were times in the speaking class that you got it just right, and we said, that's it. Well, somehow or other, you had confidence in that moment, and accidentally you moved into the right subjective behavior. Right now, you went to, let us call it, your worst external behavior with an exercise. That's right, isn't that so?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Do you see that? Mm-hmm. Good. So bypass. So I don't have to do that kind of external sort of exacerbation of the exercise. I don't have to put myself through that kind of unhappiness anymore. I can go really more directly to the internal part of my understanding. See, I think we do all punish ourselves in a certain way. I think when we were saying Glear, there are certain times when you punish yourself as you try an exercise when you were doing it academically and obediently, it was a kind of a punishment. And there are other times when you bypass that mm-hmm. and go right to your deeper knowledge of what it should be, whether it's exactly right or not, who cares? Right? That's what I think we all do, is that we get so intent on not being able to do it, that we then make ourselves go through an exercise and create problems over and beyond what the exercise is. Yeah, so say to yourself each time, you can even say it out loud, if you would, I bypass the punishments. I bypass the fear of the exercise. Something like that. Try it. And now let the hands... Good, that's the way you bypass it. And now let the hands be a little more forward with each step.
Yeah, I think it would take a long time.
Oh, shoot.
Sway.
Yeah, just the way it took time for the speaking. But that's it. Now sit and let's watch Glia and just observe on the other person. Now, for the sake of the exercise, I would like there to be more formality in the direction of the hands. Okay? So do it just a little slower.
Okay.
And it's as though you're saying, well, I'm going to get all these numbers, I'm going to just lay them out.
Mm-hmm.
What's happening? See, it's on the right track, but I want it to be more conscious. So I think you're holding back on the length that the hand should go out. This is what you're giving. You're going.
Uh-huh.
So it's still borderline. And what I'm asking, what I'm asking is, feel this?
Okay.
Feel the distance that my hand travels?
Uh-huh.
That's what I want. That's enough. I'd like you to think that through at home. All right. What's happening is that we don't yet know the difference between allowing something to take its proper space, its proper movement through space,
mm-hmm.
allowing it to fulfill its natural swing, because we have to learn it, all right, because we discarded it. And I feel that there's a fight inside between what you think is natural and what you think is force. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Sit. Work on it at home. And look in the mirror. And even standing still, look in the mirror and do this, you see? And then do this.
Mm-hmm.
And see whether this looks bad. Does it look bad on me? No. You see, there is something natural about the swing. This is what your body is refusing to do. Your body is refusing to do this, even though we say you don't have to do it all the time, just as an exercise. It won't even do it.
Well, it feels real fakey. It feels like I'm really forcing it.
Exactly. And as you can see, that's it. So there's some social attitude that is getting into the way of this particular exercise. And the social attitude says, but we're not supposed to force anything. We're supposed to be natural.
Well, no, I think a lot of it has to do with what you said before about not trying to do it too much and be obedient and all that stuff.
I see what you mean. You know, so what we're doing, what that problem is this. The teaching really is like this. It's this much. No, it's this much.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's a little bit of this. It's a little bit of that. It's neither this nor that. It's the crack between. And you have to find that crack between.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I don't want you to do any more of it right now. Go home and resolve it and remind me to check that this little thing. Because if you can get this, you'll get two things at once. You get both this, which looks better, and which has a certain beautiful form to your walking, but you will also be conquering or dealing with that thing in the mind which says, how much is the right amount? Which, until you work that out, will keep spoiling everything you do because you don't know how much is the right amount. Just as in the very beginning of your lessons, remember you didn't know the right amount of breath? You may have to find it. One was too little, one was too much, and neither worked for you until you got the right weight. And once you got the right weight of breath, it set everything in the body into action, and then you could say, the ship sailed into. So this is what you have to do now with that. And it's true with almost everything I tell you. When you were reading in the speaking class, you found the right amount of everything. You found the right amount of involvement in the story, the right amount of making a correction if necessary. It was again, you found the weight of interest, the weight of subjective involvement in the story. The story was objective, and you had just found the right amount of subjective involvement, and that worked for you. Didn't that make sense? Anybody want to say anything about that?
No.
And now that we kind of put our finger on it in theory, now it's for you to find it in your body. Because when you were doing the reading of that story in the speaking class, it wasn't a theory. Your body had just moved into it. Your eye gave it a certain amount of energy. The lips gave a certain amount of energy. The intuition was there in its energy. It was all sort of balanced. See, but it was physical. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, why don't you clear the table? And let's go to the Tennessee Williams. Somewhere along the end, where do you have any idea of where we start?
I have an idea. Idea is, now I'm going to open the door again.
And
well, there's kind of two places we ended. You remember that big speech I have? Well, we ended after that at one point, and then there's another ending.
Glia, could you tell me step by step what you've gone through up until that point, what Cornelia has done, and be very succinct about it.
Up to this point?
Yeah, where you're going to begin.
Oh, boy.
Just in chunks, say,
right.
She is waiting for...
She...
That's why you have to do it.
Right. She is nervous about this election.
No, I don't even want... See, that's a general thing.
What
I want you to do is say, she is trying to reach Esmeralda.
Oh, all right.
She
okay.
reached Esmeralda.
She calls... She calls the woman who...
No, don't be in too much detail. See, that will mix you up. You have to get it succinct, just bare bones.
She's made a phone call and canceled her...
No, see, that's unnecessary. What I think is this. She's trying to reach Esmeralda.
She reaches Esmeralda.
Okay. She banters back and forth with Grace, you know, about the records and the Vivaldi.
Right.
Good. She gets a phone call. Go ahead now.
She tells Esmeralda her position on the election.
Okay.
They don't have it yet. She comes on to Grace.
Okay, in what way? In terms of the 15 years?
Well, yes. In terms of the 15 years, and the roses.
And when you say comes on, there I think what is necessary is to say she becomes poetic and sentimental with grace. Okay.
Then she gets angry at Grace.
For why?
Grace laughs at her poetic sentimentality.
Yes. Okay. And then that brings up.
And then I think that's where pretty much where we are.
Okay. Do you feel now? Just say that again, so that. But just say it so that you're there. You've traveled through all that.
She tries to reach Esmeralda. She reaches Esmeralda. She tells Esmeralda her position about what she's willing to do about the election. She becomes poetic and sentimental with Grace, with roses and a story about the past. She becomes angry at Grace because Grace laughs at her.
Perfect. Now, Dee, can you bring this up in terms of Grace? Do you see that's perfect? You are ready to begin. Now you.
Grace has come down in the morning and found Cornelia already awake. She's going to the mail. She wants to go through the mail.
I think that's too much. I think with Grace, the stuff that will help you get to where you are is Grace comes down late in the morning. She avoids Cornelia in every which way. She can't help laughing, or else she laughs deliberately, at Cornelia's sentimentality. She keeps She keeps tripping Cornelia up. I don't know how to say that myself.
She keeps, perfect.
Mm-hmm. She baits Cornelia. And now we're up to...
She has just tried to offer her apologies. We don't know whether she means it or not, but she has extended her hand to Cornelia. And Cornelia has just gone away.
Okay, good. Now just take that, and now just read to find out what it's about. And as you read to find out what the next scene is about, what you'll find is that natural intelligence, internal natural intelligence, will move very easily into what's there. Don't ask for performances. Go ahead.
In that velvet dressing gown, you look like the Emperor Tiberius in his imperial toga. Your hair and eyes are both the color of iron. Iron gray. Invincible looking. Your force, and they admire you for it. They come to you here for opinions on this or that. What plays are good on Broadway this season? What books are worth reading? Your wisdom. And in addition to that, you have your wealth. Not imperial, Cornelia, but gray. Yes, gray, the color of a cobweb. Something white getting soiled, the gray of something forgotten. And that being the case, that being the difference between...
Did you understand that? I will accept no office except Esmeralda.
Let's gossip a little bit about the characters. Right. So we started again after many long weeks. Let's gossip a little bit about the character. As a director, if I didn't know you and you were just getting paid equity, I would look and say, what's wrong with that actress? Why was there not a kind of an up thing? Oh yes, let's discuss. I felt a down thing from you. What did I get just then?
Oh, I guess I was thinking we were going to keep going to the end. Is what
oh, really?
That's what I had that in my mind.
Okay, let's not. Let's...
Good.
Let's really gossip for a minute. I think the gossip has to do with Grace. With the quality that Grace is showing through Dee. Dee is filtering Grace through something that I question. Now, you may be able to defend it, but at the moment, I'm questioning it, okay? That's one thing we want to discuss. The other thing is that perhaps for Cornelia, based on a grace that we will arrive at, there hasn't been an earth-shaking change in Cornelia, so that when she speaks to Esmeralda on the phone, we're not getting a Cornelia whose army is frayed and tattered. We're getting the same Cornelia as we had at the beginning of the play.
Oh.
Okay? Now let's talk about Grace. I think I'm going to act like director now and not teacher and tell you what I want. And then let's see where we get with it. I feel that the grace that's coming out through Dee is a very tough little lady. And a lady is really hard and who is really giving it to her. And I feel that this person could not have lived in the same house with Cornelia for 15 years had she been that way. One of the lines that luckily I let you read until, and you said, my gray is like a cobweb. I don't see cobweb when you speak. So it was not shocking words, something you've been trying to avoid by not saying it, by avoiding the issue, playing the records, looking at the mail, doing anything you could. You've been trying to avoid having to tell her that there is something going on inside of you that she is just so theatrical and so busy bossing it over everybody that she hasn't recognized. It's a very real relationship, and that's the way it happens between people. So I'm not getting what I think has to be there. I have to feel it. Cornelia has to feel it. I have to feel this shy little secretary, if not pretty, but lovely face, or nice eyes, or a certain delicate way of behaving. I have to feel something soft, something cobwebby, and I have to feel that she finally tells Cornelia what she has just been saying, because Cornelia has insisted if she could have avoided it, she would have. Does this trouble you in any way? Do you feel that?
No, I didn't feel right about what I was doing, but I wasn't. I mean, it felt wrong while I was doing it, but I wasn't sure like why, and I was kind of fumbling within the reading to figure out what I had lost, because
yes.
I think I didn't have it. I think I had some part of it before, and I've lost it.
Okay, good. You know, I find that in my writing, I notice that sometimes I can't not write a scene because I haven't quite figured out what it should be. I have to put the damn thing down on the paper, whichever way I do it. Once it's down on the paper, then I can say, no, that's not the way I want it to go. So your doing it this way is fine. It is great because it's there, it's concrete. We can say, okay, this is the way, this is what's happening with it. All right? I think that what will happen to Cornelia is really based on this cobweb suddenly coming to life. And as you see it, you will be shaken. And then what happens is that's the beginning of the end for you, don't you think? That when she does that, then everything else after that is defeat, defeat, defeat. Yeah, so that's really a telling point in the play.
Yeah, I sort of forgot, actually, what this was about.
Yeah, uh-huh, and we just had to begin it somewhere. So we're going to go back to it. So what occurs to me is that it, what she is then tells us what Cornelia is that you have been able for 15 years, maybe the last 6 months or something, you sense that something is wrong. You've been able to dramatize yourself, to be theatrical. You had a built-in audience. You were able to do anything. You were able to talk about books, about art, about theatricals. You were able to dress, and you had this built-in little mouse of a pretty little, and she should be a pretty little secretary. And she really does have to be, my mother would use the word tom, meaning taste. See, if she isn't pretty, there's something lovely about her, or soft about the way that she dresses. And that has to be natural. But it's a good balance to the masculine in Cornelia. Now, we don't know yet whether we're talking, remember at early in the thing we said, is this a lesbian? Mm-hmm. Is this a recognized? Is this a latent? We don't know. I mean, it's sort of going to come out of the two of you. What we do know is that it is a relationship in which we can say that one, the so-called stronger, or the richer, found an audience in the other and found someone with whom she could play act all the time.
A fan.
A fan. Perfect. Exactly. And, let me see. We found the other not probably liking it the first few years. It was secure. And Cornelia has a certain amount of brightness and gaiety to her, and attractiveness. One is attracted to that. Isn't that the way it is in a marriage? At first you like what the other person is doing, but it's not, and then suddenly one day, one year, you're going to think, but this isn't who I am. You know, and when am I going to have my day on stage? And that's what happens in relationships. You suddenly can't stay with things as they are. And if you don't have encounters each day to settle each thing as it comes up, then what you do is you let it build and build by not speaking and becoming more and more remote. That seems to me is what happened to me. Okay. Let's take it again. And let's... How, Dee, this is a technique. How do you filter through? Filter through. See, if I had to take Grace on and begin it again, how would I do it? I would filter, this is the way I say it to myself sometimes, filter it through, I'm going to say Janet Gaynor. Now, Janet Gaynor was a movie star of the 30s, and she would, do you remember the quality of Janet Gaynor? So, sweet, what was it called, Seventh Heaven? You know, where there was always the big eyes and the softness and the sweet. See, but it, see, this is what you did, and this is what I did. Look, you cartooned her.
Right.
See, and that's what's wrong with your Grace. Whereas I kept saying she was sweet and her eyes were large. Did you see? That was the difference. You cannot cartoon the qualities in this woman. If you don't, If you, as a person, sympathize, I'm not saying sentimentalize, but actually like and sympathize with those qualities, then you will move through the years, telescope, into no longer liking what Cornelia bears down on you. No longer really enjoying her giving you a flower every year or some big gift, which is what she did. And at first you were flattered. You are no longer flattered by that. And your way has been to say less and less. You really are not a confrontational person. Okay? So really go into it. Now, how are you going to filter through? What will you filter through? Mine would have been, if I filtered through Janet Gaynor, I could then work with Cornelia. I could, Cornelia, please, don't. I don't want to. Do you feel it's suddenly different? What are you filtering yours through?
Idea in the lifetime.
Okay. That's fine with me, because I think you know what you're saying, and it can even be private. It's somewhat private to me, but fine. Filter it through. Just keep that other D there and just let everything move through it. You know, water filters through charcoal. It comes out a third way. All right? That's what we want. I'm sorry, dear. Stay with what you're... I want for you, Cornelia, not to cross your legs, because that I let you do first time round because it's hard. I don't want you to have to cross your legs when you act. See, that would be a time for variety. It's sit down, don't leave the table. Is that an order? Be taken aback for a moment and then find the right answer. See, you didn't really hear it. You didn't have to search for an answer. Use that. See, what we're getting is no changes. This is what I think it should have been. When you said, please turn on the Victrola, I think stressing the word please is to make sure that it is a request, right? Mm-hmm. So it would have been, look, I would have watched her, watched my eye on her. Please, please turn off the Victrola. And I would have sustained, been in suspension. And then when she sits, you see how my breath is staying with it because I have more to say. One, two, three, four, five. You feel it? Mm-hmm. See, whereas you stopped your breath and began again.
Mm-hmm.
There was no suspense in the thing. Go for the... more dramatic.
Mm-hmm.
Use that as a metaphor. Use that as a, mm-hmm. you know.
Grace, don't you feel there's something unspoken between us?
Good.
No.
No, I don't. I do. I felt for a long time something unspoken between us.
Okay, Grace, when you say no, I don't, I'd like to feel, if you're a little creature in your own cobweb, I'd like to feel that you retreat. See, you went, no, I don't. And what I'd like to do is, you know that the moment she says that, that's trouble. So I'd like to feel that this delicate little furry creature is retreating, and then go back into the cobweb, hide behind it, and answer her. Try to keep this conversation from getting started.
Grace, don't you feel there's something unspoken between us?
No, I don't.
I do. I felt for a long time something unspoken between us.
Don't you think there's always something unspoken between two people?
See, keep avoiding it.
Right. I see no reason for it.
But don't a great many things exist without reason?
Well, let's not turn this into a metaphysical discussion.
All right.
You see how it works in with the language now, with mm-hmm. what you're both saying? See, now you're beginning. You're retreating and avoiding it, and that makes her deny what you're saying. Go ahead. Keep going.
All right. But mystify me.
It's very simple.
No, you mystify me. Look at her and let your eyes filter through the other D. And just look at her and with those big blue eyes that we saw in your yearbook. Yeah, it's those eyes that you must look through and say, but you mystify me. I don't know what you're talking about. Mm-hmm.
All right. But but you mystify me.
Good.
It's very simple. It's just that I feel there's something unspoken between us that ought to be spoken. Why are you looking at me like that?
How am I looking at you?
With positive terror.
No, okay. Again, that's a junk. And that's not... So whatever it is there, it's like you're playing melodies. Mm-hmm. Go into another part of the melody. And it would be just look at her and say, how am I looking? You know, and even smile a little. Okay?
Why are you looking at me like that?
How am I looking at you?
With positive terror.
Poor Amelia.
You are. But I'm not going to be shut up.
Well, go on. Continue. Please do.
I'm going to. I will.
No.
Let it ring. Take it off the hook.
Do you just let me...
Off the hook, I told you. A voice says, hello.
Yeah, okay. Let me show you what you did, Dee. This is what you did with your hand. Mm-hmm. You went...
That's not grace.
Okay, do it again. So what's happening is that we're just... See, by picking on you, don't be overwhelmed.
I won't be picked on.
Okay, good. What's happening is that just by removing those tiny little mistakes, you see, there's grace. It's the mistakes that are keeping you from it. Mm-hmm. I'm going to fill with tears. That's grace. Just go to that word, that sentence. Filter it through.
I can't stand it.
Be still. Someone can hear you.
That's
not okay. Now stop that. Stop that silly little female trick.
You say there's something unspoken. Well, maybe there is. I don't know. I do know some things are better left unspoken. Also, I know that when a silence between two people has gone on for a long time, it's like a wall that's impenetrable between them. Maybe between us there is such a wall.
Good. Okay. You're on the right track. Now, I want to talk about the person listening, and this will go for you when you listen. How does one listen? I was, first studying acting. Listening was the hardest thing in the world to do. I didn't know what to do. And they would give us, in these classes, speeches from Greek, from the Greek place, and you had to sort of stand there, and you think, oh my God, if they don't stop soon, I'll go mad. What'll I keep? Keep thinking, keep in the character, keep in the... It was really, really hard. And I didn't learn it for quite some time. It was a good try, Cornelia, a good try, but it was hard. All right? So let me see whether I can listen as Cornelia and sort of see what happens, using this play as, not as the role you're going to play.
So you would read...
I think go back to the first part. Don't go to the end.
You see this
down on tape because I want to remember it. Just as we said that you have to have a Santa Claus pack filled with things, because holding on to any one thing past its use to you is going to kill it, see? And then suddenly it comes up dead. It's like a fish. It'll float up on its belly. It won't serve you anymore. So too, when you take a thought, like, I am ready to sing, or I'm going to make believe I'm a great singer, you've got to trust. See, the brain, in its natural intelligence, Gloriana, of which you have much, in real life, in a very natural way, all I would have to say to you would be, oh, Gloriana, why don't you just take some water and spit it out? Don't drink it down. Remember I did that to you before you sang? You got up, you went to the kitchen, took the water, spit it out, and then you came back and you were ready to sing. Okay? You didn't have to say to yourself as you walked through the hallway,
I'm going to walk over there.
That's right, I'm going to spit it out. I'm just going to take the water. You didn't do that. You heard me say it once. And then you went, did it, and came back. That was because in your natural daily life, you trusted your intelligence. What happened was when you felt during the song that you had to keep saying to yourself, great singer, I can do this, I'm going to make believe I'm a great singer, that was not letting natural intelligence be at work. That was once again, in another way, saying, oh, I don't trust it. You see that? Okay. You see, so what I want is for you to to do it so many times, the beginning, that you know that all you have to do is pass a thought over the brain, and this time you will remember. May I take a glass? Do you think it's okay to take a glass of water? Why don't you take it and just spit it out? Just remember that, because that really happened between us, didn't it? And you know what, you know how it happened. You heard it once, you understood it, and that's what you did. Singing is no different.
Hard to think that way, because
right.
I'm not used to thinking that.
That's right.
I think I understand.
Of course you do. So what, see, in one way, when we love the art, when we really love it, the way we really do, when I love acting, you love singing, that's very wonderful of us, because in a way we bring our best self to the art. Just as we said, you know, at the beginning, before we even began the lesson, we said, breathe out and let your mind forget everything that's on the outside and bring the best quality of attention, of really paying attention, the best quality of listening to the lesson. But so too, when we love the art, we want to do it. But there is a way of over-loving it, of putting the art on such a high pedestal, away from us, beyond us, that we kill it. You see? I mean, you cannot love a baby too much. Does that make sense to you? You really have to love your child, but let it alone and know that it's just a child like every other kid on the block. If you make too much of your child, that child will grow up neurotic, won't it? If you don't let the child play with the other kids on the block and learn by falling and jumping and playing and scratching him, herself, that's not good for the child. Okay. If you protect the child against anything that somebody might say to him or her, you then are not giving the child his, her own strength. Art is the same way. Okay? Now what you've got to do is find out how to believe it. You see? So one way that I would like you to begin to believe it, if you have paper in your book, when you leave here today, don't drive the car. Get into the car.
Huh? I'm just kidding.
What is that?
I'm just kidding.
What did
you
say?
You said, don't drive the car. I said, walk home.
Oh, all right. From that smart aleck, you know, student, when I'm at my most serious, I don't need, right? Okay. What I want is for you to sit in the car, and I'd like you to write out your thoughts before you are distracted into driving, putting the key in the ignition, putting the safety belt on. None of that. Just sit and say, How can I believe that art is real? Art is a part of my life. Art is no different from anyone's life. What is art? The only reason you're going to know how to sing compared to your sister, who maybe has a very good voice and won't know how to sing, is that you will have learned technique. Wouldn't that be the difference? You see? So that's what you're doing. But when you learn the technique, the art is there for you. And that's what you still don't know. See? So the distrust of yourself and the distrust of your ability and the feeling that it's something better or higher or richer or more beautiful than life itself.